name is Lisa Alistway, and welcome to my channel. This channel features inspirational and informational videos. So if that sounds good to you and you haven't subscribed, please subscribe. My guest today is Dr. Sunil Dand, who is a physician specializing in internal and lifestyle medicine with a focus on metabolic health. Welcome, Dr. Dand.
Thank you, Lisa. It's great to join you and looking forward to an excellent discussion here.
My pleasure. I can't wait to get into today's topic. Before we do that, can you share a little bit about your background?
Certainly. Well, as you can probably tell, I'm not from the United States. I grew up in the United Kingdom, went to medical school over there, and then shortly after graduation, I came to the US. I've worked up and down the East Coast in a number of different settings, type of hospitals. And shortly after finishing my residency in Baltimore, which was in internal medicine, I developed a passion for lifestyle medicine, metabolic health, after seeing our true pandemic of chronic disease. And it's taken me on quite a journey, especially the last 3 years have been a roller coaster for all of us. And very much my focus now in my outpatient practice is teaching the message of healthy living, how people can really empower themselves to make the right decisions. And more than that, how we are unfortunately in a terrible environment right now where we have a lot of forces that are actually deliberately working against us. And it's up to us to be well informed for ourselves and our families and make sure that we push back against all of these forces to really attain true physical and mental well-being. So that's what I'm all about as a doctor.
Awesome. Awesome. Is that part of the reason why you started a YouTube channel and to have a bigger presence and to reach more people?
Absolutely. I mean, being a physician is very rewarding, primarily for those one-on-one connections. But at some point you realize that if you have a bigger message, then you need a bigger platform. And we are blessed to live in an era of social media. It brings many downsides, but one of the benefits is you can really teach your message to the whole world. So yes, that's why I started my channel many years ago now, way before the pandemic, I think 2016, 17. I started just as a hobby, just talking about whatever I wanted to in terms of health and wellness. And then the pandemic really grew my channel because I was talking about a lot of things that people wanted to hear discussed, but were not being discussed by the mainstream.
Yes, yes. So before we get into some of the problems and solutions in the healthcare system, I want to ask you, what is the healthcare system doing right?
Oh, that's a great question to start off with. I like the positivity there.
Yes.
We are undoubtedly going to talk about a lot of negative issues as well.
Yeah.
I think certain aspects of our healthcare system are good in the United States. I think we have phenomenal speed of care. If people come in with an emergency, they get seen to very quickly, pretty much in any hospital in the US. And you, within the first day or two of being in the hospital, will often have a number of different modalities thrown at you to try to get your diagnosis, get you moving in the right direction. In other countries, it can take a lot longer. And you might be in a room with 20 other people, those long hospital wards that used to probably exist here 50 years ago, still exist in many other countries. I think that we do quite well, emergency care, and I still practice in the hospital. And I'm very proud to be able to practice in a high-tech environment where I actually think we do a good job. Somebody comes in with a heart attack, they come in with an infection, sepsis, stroke. We actually do have very good quick treatment that we can give them, which isn't available in many countries. So let's not forget that we're blessed in that way. And I actually always use the example. I truly believe that a homeless person coming into a US hospital with an acute emergency will get better care than a rich person almost anywhere else. So keep that in mind. That's something good. Mm-hmm. Secondly, I believe that we are very good with patient rights. We're very focused on delivering a kind of customer service mentality in healthcare, but also the fact that a patient and family does have certain rights, expectations when they come into hospital. We've gone too far the other way medico-legally, I believe, but certainly having that backup and know that, okay, your doctor and hospital has to give you a certain level of care, otherwise somebody could die. And if that isn't achieved, there will be legal consequences. I think you do need some of that. And we respect the patients in terms of their wishes for care. whether they want certain things withheld or continued, like are they going to be resuscitated or not. We really do respect the wishes of the patient more than many other countries. So I think that's the second thing we do well. And thirdly, I'd say this links to the first point. I think we're very technologically advanced and we have access to treatments, even for chronic conditions that wouldn't be available in other countries.
Very good. Very good. I wanted to open with that because it's not all negative. America has some of the best healthcare in the world. That's why a lot of people come here for their surgeries or doctors move here to work here because they have better working conditions. So definitely has a lot of positives. So let's touch on some of the problems because we've definitely seen that highlighted in the last couple of years. People have been able to voice their concerns around certain medical treatments and getting, you know, informed consent around it and understanding the treatments. And it started a whole host of discussions about, you know, where the healthcare system could be better and where it's broken. But I'm excited to talk to you because you work on the front line within the healthcare system. And you've been very vocal and, you know, calling people to the carpet. And I admire that. You know, some people are too silent to speak up and to voice their opinion for whatever reason. And we're definitely living in a weird time where everything gets censored, even if it's opinions. So let's touch on some of these primary problems in healthcare. What would you consider to be your top five?
Top five. Well, firstly, I would say without a doubt, the costs are spiraling out of control, both at a high level in terms of the trillions of dollars that we spend. That sort of spending is unsustainable. I saw a statistic that if current trends continue, healthcare will basically eat up 80% of our entire budget within 20 to 30 years. So we need to put the brakes on. And at an individual level, many people find healthcare very expensive. Even if they've got insurance, it's something that they will face big bills for. That's going to be my number one issue, is the costs. That ties into the good I said initially. Obviously, that comes at a cost, and that's one of them. Number two, I would say this, all of these will link together, you'll see. But number two, because of my own specialty and area of expertise, lifestyle medicine, metabolic health, I believe that chronic lifestyle-related diseases are bringing not just healthcare down, but will eventually bring the country down. And we are not focused on that. We are a pharmaceutical-led philosophy. We have a pharmaceutical-led philosophy in healthcare. This goes back decades, but it's got much worse over the last 20 to 30 years. And we believe that the answers to the chronic disease pandemic that we're seeing, whether it's obesity, whether it's type 2 diabetes, whether it's heart disease, other inflammatory disorders, we believe that the solution lies in pharmaceutical interventions, when actually we are completely failing to address the root cause, which is, as you know, you've watched my videos, my spiel on poor lifestyle. We're not pushing this enough. And a lot of people say that it's not for doctors to talk about, and people are going to do what they want to do, and we shouldn't even discuss. Some people are even saying if patients come in who are overweight or obese, we shouldn't even mention it in the chart, talk to them, or even weigh them in the first place, which is ludicrous, absolutely ludicrous. I think most people would agree. But I always draw the example of what happened with smoking in the 1960s and 70s, when every other person smoked. Doctors used to smoke on ward rounds, teachers used to smoke, but we've moved the needle on that through a massive public health campaign. And we need something orders of the magnitude greater for our current metabolic health disaster, the soaring rates of obesity, chronic disease. We could do that as doctors. I do not believe for one moment that if physicians didn't go all in on this and tell every single patient, have posters everywhere talking about the dangers of ultra processed foods. This is another topic we could get into in a few minutes, but I'll stay focused here. The second issue is the chronic disease burden that we are completely neglecting.
Yep.
Okay. I would say the third pitfall of our current system is the fact that in the United States, we don't give equal access to everybody. People who can't afford it or don't have insurance really suffer. I remember one of the first things that really hit me and tore at my heartstrings when I first came to the United States to undertake residency training was seeing elderly people who were breaking their pills in half. And these were pills that they actually needed. And I couldn't fathom it coming from a country where you didn't see things like this. And these were elderly people who'd worked their whole lives. So we have a very unequal healthcare system. Number three, I would say the fourth issue is our primary care system is completely decimated, almost non-existent. In many parts of the country, you can't find a primary care system because we are profit driven. We focus as doctors, if you ask any future doctor what they want to do in medical school, it's always, I want to do some specialty where you earn vastly more sums of money. And I can empathize with that to a degree because they're so much in debt, but they never want to do primary care. It's a lower paid specialty. But I think much more than it being low pay, I feel like it's an impossible job. Because of regulations, the enormous bureaucracy, doctors might have 5 minutes with a patient and you can't possibly solve problems in only 5 minutes. So it's become an impossible job. Nobody wants to do primary care. I could probably list, I wouldn't say that I'm listing these problems in any specific order, but giving you the top five. I would say that the fifth problem is corporate interests, which have completely crept into medical practice to the point where they almost dictate clinical practice for frontline physicians. The influence of big pharmaceutical companies, other corporate interests, because we are in a profit system with many different agendas involved. This is now very, very different from 30 years ago when you had your good old-fashioned country doc. You may have grown up with someone like this who came to your house with a bag. They would see the patient, family, the whole community knew them. We now are in the era of corporate medicine where doctors are employees. They are no longer their own boss. They get dictated to from up above. Goodness knows where those dictates are coming from, but they're, I can assure you, not focused on the true health and well-being of the patient. Money is driving the whole system. And those corporate interests are very clever. They're not stupid people. They know how to manipulate the system. They know how to get doctors on board. They know that sadly, a lot of doctors are not going to question things. They're just going to follow along with the narrative. And that is why, and I will sum this up now for your watchers here, that's why you've all probably had the experience where you can't get appointments. Appointments are rushed. You are given a prescription which you are unsure about. You haven't had time to ask questions. You go get it filled. It costs you an absolute bomb. And then you're put on it. You might get a side effect. And then you'll go back to the doctor and the cycle will repeat again. And that's also why when you go into a hospital, despite the nuggets of good care that you may get here and there, you will find that the same issues exist. Things are very rushed. You're not getting complete answers. You don't feel like the system has really treated you with as much respect as it could have, considering you're a unique individual. It might be better than other countries, but it's still not where it should be. And then you're faced with this massive bill afterwards that you weren't expecting and don't even understand. So I've talked for a long time there, but those would be my top five. And feel free to tell me your thoughts and ask me any questions.
Yes, yes. And that is just a short list. I'm sure we could keep going down the line with some more problems. But I think you did a great job highlighting like the top five that most people would definitely agree with you. So let's touch on how can we fix the cost of healthcare? You know, it's so expensive. People get bankrupt because if they don't have insurance, they have to file for bankruptcy. And pharmaceutical meds can be very costly in this country where it could be cheaper in other countries. So it doesn't make sense to a lot of people why it has to cost so much.
Absolutely. Well, I think that the first step, if we're talking about pharmaceutical meds, is to reduce their influence. I sometimes refer to this country. I mean, I'm a naturalized citizen. I love this country. I want it to win, but I can see that it's not going to win. We're going to fall behind other countries for a number of reasons, including this one here related to health. But if we're talking about true well-being and having that interest high up in government, you have to reduce the influence of pharmaceutical companies on Capitol Hill. They are completely out of control. They spend hundreds of millions of dollars lobbying to get favorable outcomes. Both political parties are involved. And as a result of that, they are allowed to basically gorge the United States for money. They're allowed to charge exorbitant fees that would never be allowed in any other country. No country would allow it. Most countries, especially in Europe, negotiate with pharmaceutical companies and tell them what they think the price should be. And in the end, the pharmaceutical company will have some leeway. But the American citizenry is really paying for the rest of the world in a lot of ways as well, because pharmaceutical companies are thinking on a global scale, but they know that they can't get away with other things in other countries, but they can in the United States. They just have an enormous amount of power. I mean, switch on cable TV. My next video is going to be about this topic. Pharmaceutical ads, which were not even allowed 25 years ago, are now basically every single commercial. And it's all designed with the goal of getting as many people as possible on medications. They know exactly what they're doing. So that would be the first thing I would say, is we have to get these corporate interests out of healthcare. And it will take a very brave leader to do that. But hopefully, if enough people wake up, there can be some pressure to change the system.
Yes, yes. I was also wondering, as far as like fixing the cost of healthcare, how can we get it lower without lowering quality of care? And what are your thoughts on universal healthcare?
Sure. Yeah, well, a lot of this obviously links with what I just said about pharmaceutical influence, et cetera, and general philosophy at the top. Universal healthcare, so it's an interesting concept. And I think a lot of people have a misunderstanding about what it means, because in some ways, we already have universal healthcare in this country. If somebody comes into the emergency room, they're going to get treated. They're going to stay in the hospital as long as they need to. So why not make it formal in a way, rather than having a system where people have to do it sneakily and then get crushed with bills? Now, I am not somebody who is in favor of quote unquote socialized medicine, because I come from a country with socialized medicine, and I can see that there are enormous drawbacks. But at some stage, you have to have something in the middle, some sort of compromise. I did an elective medical school elective in Australia in my final year, and they have a fantastic system. What they have is they have a backup system for everybody who needs it, so that if you need basic care, you'll get it. But if you can get private insurance, you get a tax rebate, and you go to a different hospital, you have a different standard of care in a way. But I think it might be a good idea if the United States eventually gets to a point where some level of basic care is formally offered. It could just be for emergencies, that's it. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have to be necessarily for ongoing care, but start with something just to cover people for that possibility that a disaster might happen out of the blue. It's obviously difficult logistically to do something like that, because then you want something which isn't going to allow people to abuse it. I think that it's fair enough to have some sort of insurance-based system as well, so that everybody has some type of buy-in. The problem is that because people with insurance are in effect paying for those without insurance, that also drives up costs. So it's a complete mess. It's a swamp. I don't claim to have all the answers, but to directly answer your question, do I want socialized medicine in the United States? No, I don't think it should be socialized like Europe. Mm-hmm. I think that you can have a hybrid type system in place to help people who really need it and have no insurance. But then you have to fix other problems as well. You can't have some sort of free healthcare and have, you see, if you compare to Europe, they have a lot more control over their borders, who's in the country, they know exactly who's there. I don't want to go too much off topic, but if you're in effect in a country where you don't even know how many people live in certain areas in your state, whatever, then I can see how it would be a big problem to start offering any free level of healthcare. So it's a mess, as you can see.
Yes, yes. A big complaint that I have is the transparency of costs, especially like if you go to the emergency room and you end up in the hospital for a week and then you get the bill and you're just like blown away. You know, like, wow, $100,000 for 5 days in the hospital, you know?
Insanity. It really is. Yeah, I agree. There needs to be more transparency and there has to be more oversight in terms of what people are charging. But it all seems to be something of a game. I mean, I've heard that you get this bill and then you negotiate with them and they take it down. And it shouldn't need to be like that, especially with healthcare.
It's maddening. It's like, we're not trying to buy a car here. This is our life. This is our health.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, it's insane. Okay, let's talk about your second one, which I believe you said was regarding lifestyle chronic diseases.
Yes.
So how can we fix that in America? How can we improve the health status of Americans?
Yeah, well, firstly, it's important to remind ourselves of the shocking health status of Americans, which is why I do what I do. It's an absolute catastrophe. I don't think problem or crisis are strong enough words to describe what we are seeing. And we're seeing something happen here. And it's important everybody realizes this, understands we are witnessing a colossal mass murder event, if you think about it. How many hundreds of thousands of people are getting chronically sick right now compared to 20, 30 years ago? And the numbers are heading in the wrong direction. It was unheard of 30, 40 years ago to even have a 10% obesity rate in your area. Now it's 50 or 60%. And this is not purely a cosmetic issue. This is a health issue. So to back up a little bit, we have to ask, well, what's caused this problem? Because obesity goes hand in hand with so many chronic diseases, inflammatory illnesses, and they're skyrocketing. And if we don't get that under control, how can we even hope to control healthcare costs when people are getting sicker and sicker at a younger age? What's happened, Lisa, in the last 30, 40, 50 years to take us where we are today? I mean, you only need to go to any supermarket or amusement park and see that people physically look a lot different to how they did. And everybody's so scared to talk about it, which I find insane. I think people in the future are going to look back at this time in history, what's happened between 1990 and 2020, and see the situation America got itself into and be in utter disbelief that people didn't talk about this more. Many people out there think that obesity is simply an issue of excess calories. You don't burn enough calories, take in too many, and then you put on weight. It's not that simple. The calorie model is broken. It's what's done to the food that matters. 200 calories of spinach is not the same as 200 calories of a fake cereal bar. That cereal bar is what is going to cause you to go into metabolic dysfunction if you eat that type of food for long enough and in enough quantities. Whereas the spinach, or I could give any example, it could be broccoli. Mm-hmm. Natural food is what people were consuming 50, 60, 70 years ago. So food which was very close to its original form. It was a vegetable or fruit from the field. It was dairy. It was meat. But it hadn't been processed by human beings. So I'm always cognizant of the level I'm talking to and who's listening. I'm assuming a lot of your viewers are probably already aware of this. Mm-hmm. But current statistics suggest that 70% of all calorie intake in the United States is ultra-processed food. And it's going up every year. Same for children and adults. 70%. That's up from 10 or 20% 40 or 50 years ago. And this is the main reason why we are seeing the problems we are seeing. Because look at any ingredient label, all of the fake ingredients put in there, sugar put in there, preservatives. Our bodies are simply not built for that food, and they never will be. So what happens is when we consume these foods in vast quantities, it's a tremendous strain on our liver. Our cells become inflamed, our insulin levels go up, we get fat deposition and storage in excess, i.e. obesity, and a whole host of other problems. And we're seeing this unfold in real time, and it's worsened over the pandemic years. Mm-hmm. And it's a catastrophe. what's happening with conditions like type 2 diabetes going through the roof. And as you know from my videos, my main issue with this right now is the medical establishment is not all in on this. They're not focusing on really telling people what they need to do to reverse this. Because if you think statistics are bad now, just wait 10 or 20 years. They're going through the roof. I mean, we have children now with fatty liver disease. It was unheard of 40 years ago. These kids, by the time they're 30, are all going to have type 2 diabetes. And instead of saying, yes, this is a catastrophe, we need to have a mass campaign, much bigger, as I said, than the campaign against tobacco. Rather than do that, we have a medical system, an establishment that is focused on pharmaceuticals. Oh, no big deal. Let's just inject people every week. Seriously, that's what masses of our establishment and top leaders are saying. It's ludicrous. That would be like when everybody was smoking, saying, oh, let's just give them an injection to help them. Oh, let's just do surgery and put a little filter in their lung. No, you tell them that they have to stop smoking. That's going to be the only way that we reverse this problem. And I think this is the biggest problem facing us, not just in terms of health. I think it's going to bring the entire country down. It's a national security issue because other countries are going to race ahead. You cannot possibly sustain the current levels of type 2 diabetes growth, obesity growth. I mean, some states have a 60% obesity rate. Kids, 20 to 30% obesity rate. Our country is going to implode on itself because of this. And I may be sounding passionate here. That's because I am passionate about this. I feel like the random guy in the 1960s or 70s who was saying, you can't have everybody smoking. This is horrible. And nobody was listening to them. Mm-hmm. This is exactly the stage we're in now. And the prime reason is people are consuming ultra-processed fake foods and are not realizing that this is just as dangerous as tobacco.
Mm-hmm. Do you, since you work in the healthcare system, you're around doctors, do you get the idea or the feeling that they're just putting their hands up in the air? They're like, we've told them to exercise and eat better and it's not working. So now we're going to give them the Ozempic, the Wegovy, the Mounjaro, the injections or the surgery and make that the primary solution, even to 12 and 13 year olds. Where they're just have given up on trying to educate in the lifestyle modification. So now they're in the drugs and the surgery route.
Well, to be quite frank with you, Lisa, I don't think most doctors know themselves. I mean, you can look statistically at overweight and obesity rates in doctors. Not as high as the general population, but it's certainly not something which is anything to boast about and be proud of. I think there's a total lack of education. I've worked in many different hospitals over the years. I've seen the way that my colleagues eat. I think that there's just no focus on it. I don't think that we put two and two together in our minds that absolutely every cell in our body, every thought that we have is powered by what we're eating. So junk in, junk out. Doctors are shockingly short on nutrition education. Most medical school will maybe have, they'll maybe have 1 hour lecture on it and what they're being told is wrong. The whole system goes back. This is a whole other discussion to high-level corruption in the United States, trying to promote the notion that sugars and carbs are good and fats are the bad guy in terms of health. This goes back 50 to 60 years as well. All of these different factors have come together, but doctors don't have nutrition education. I mean, hospital food is unbelievable. You go to hospital and patients coming in with an obesity-related complication, I made this point in a tweet last week, are given sodas, they're given pizzas. It's ludicrous. It's like I can't say we've lost our minds. I don't think we even had our minds in the first place. Selling deep-fried chicken tenders in the hospitals, McDonald's, Dunkin' Donuts in the hospital. I really think that people are out of their mind and future generations are going to absolutely laugh at us. Giving someone, this happens every day in hospital, every single day, today, thousands of patients in America who have come in with an obesity-related complication were given pancakes, fries, and Coca-Cola. That's just like somebody coming in with a lung infection. We may as well give them a cigarette. Do you see what we're battling against here? a total ignorance. Nobody has even put this together. So I don't expect anything from medical professionals because firstly, they're not taught it. Secondly, a lot of them are not practicing it themselves. And what's the point? I mean, what's the point of giving our patients all of these medications which are going to solve their inflammation or other issue? And at the other end, they're just pumping themselves literally with poison.
Yeah, we definitely have, it's disease care practice. It's not healthcare practice.
It's not healthcare. No, it's sick care. It's disease care. It's getting worse every single year.
Yes.
Sorry
yes.
if I've come across as pessimistic there, but I want
we have to address these problems.
Think about what we're doing. And it's only people like us and anyone who hears our message who have that collective voice will one day hopefully change things, because this is an unsustainable situation. I mean, 90% plus people don't give any thought. I mean, they will give their pets better food than they eat. They will put better fuel in their car. They'll be very careful about the fuel they put into their car, but are literally setting themselves up for a lifetime of illness. And our whole culture is set up that way. In between those big pharma ads on television, what do you see? Ads for the worst food on TV, radio. It's our whole culture that is mucked up. So that's why I say, and part of my message and part of what I teach, I got my own health academy, is that your only hope for you and your family is to pull away from the culture so that you can have that kind of stoic mindset and say, look, I'll do my best. I'll promote the message, but I'm not going to be a part of this. I will watch other people. I'll do my best for myself, but I'll realize the answer is not going to be in the mainstream. And my goal should be to try to avoid getting sick, me and my family, because once you're plugged into that system, you will be screwed in one way or another, either get a medication that doesn't agree with you or your costs, you'll be faced with a massive bill. So I say this as a doctor, please, please be healthy and do your best to stay away from doctors.
Yes, I always say go counter culture. You know, culture is not your friend with all of the toxic food environment. And, you know, yeah, there are a lot of doctors that are not the best educated, you know, with regards
They haven't got a clue. And keep in mind, this has only happened in the last 25 years. The world has lost its mind. 25 years ago, we would have some sense. Most people had a sense of personal responsibility. They knew right from wrong, and they would speak the truth. Mm-hmm. If you had someone who was gaining weight, there'd be like pressure on them. I don't want to use the term fat shaming, but in the late 90s, people would think, oh, I'm gaining weight. I need to solve this. And people around them would tell them. Now everybody's just okay with anything. There's no standards whatsoever for yourself. You know, let's not talk about it. We might offend them. What? Mm-hmm. What are you saying? You are so keen not to offend them that you will let them get sick? You can absolutely be compassionate, but you have to tell people the truth, surely, especially if you're a doctor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it's compassionate to tell the truth. I think it's pretty cruel if you are withholding information and lying to people about their health and how.
Yeah, you know. On the contrary, our culture is encouraging us to go the wrong way. Us and people's children, go eat some fast food. It's okay. It's healthy to be obese. It's okay, right? Mm-hmm. We'll just give you an injection. It's fine. No big deal. It's crazy. It's crazy. But I'm determined to keep spreading this message and fight. I'm not going anywhere. Mm-hmm. And I hope more people can hear this.
Most definitely.
And the biggest thing of all is when people make these changes in their life, literally, I've had people, I coach patients as well, who make the change from ultra processed to real foods. Within 2 weeks, their physical and mental health has transformed. You will literally feel better. You'll be more productive. You'll sleep better. You'll have more concentration, energy levels. Mm-hmm. Why would you not want that for yourself?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep. It's a tall order for some people, you know, to change their behaviors, because the habits are so ingrained, starting in childhood, continuing into adulthood. But, you know, lifestyle changes do require effort, action, and work. And I think people sometimes have to hit rock bottom to make those changes.
Yeah, it's a shame that rock bottom is often a health catastrophe,
like a heart attack and stroke and so on. Yes. Okay, so let's move on to your third problem, which was
it primary care?
It was third or fourth.
Maybe something come before primary care, but we can talk about
primary care and then corporation.
Corporations, yeah. Exactly. Okay, so we'll do primary care.
Yes.
I think that there is a solution to this, which is to, there's always a solution to everything. I'm going to be really annoying here. I want to go back to what I just said for one moment. If you want a solution to it, the government can intervene to make real food as cheap as possible. If you do that, you have a policy in place that will become people's default option rather than the processed food, which is cheaper right now. So anyway, solving primary care, I would say the first thing you do is you have to make it more attractive to do primary care. So you have to increase the income for primary care practitioners. But secondly, you have to reduce the bureaucracy involved. So you have to take the doctor back to the patient, spend as much time as you can with the patient, as little time as possible on documentation and computers. And you have to have some sort of system in place. Like in lots of places, actually, they're now forgiving loans for doctors who do primary care. I think that's a great idea as well when you know you've got a problem.
Mm-hmm. Most definitely. Primary care is important because that's where the preventative care is. And that's where you can, you know, hold off on some of these health problems that, you know, can occur and delay them later in life, you know, rather than operating from that tertiary care model.
Exactly. Yeah, that's right. So if you have a good primary care system, and this has been proven in many different countries, if you have a good primary care system in place, you reduce healthcare costs downstream vastly. If people can go to their doctor every 6 months, every 3 months, however often they need to go, and they have a good doctor who's actually giving good information, mm-hmm. then you can save a lot by doing that. And right now, people kind of just go straight to their specialist, or they'll have four or five different doctors who are all prescribing different medications.
Mm-hmm.
It's a disastrous situation. We need to restore the role. The primary care doctor is the gateway. Make it an attractive job. Don't overload the docs with bureaucracy, reasonable amount of time with patients, and increase the pay. That will probably do it.
Yeah, and just making it easier access for people to get that primary care. Because some people just wait and they just don't go because they don't want to pay the bill, or, you know,
true.
They don't think that the primary care can do much. And so, or they've had experiences where the primary care physician doesn't really follow up. You don't have a relationship with them. I think all those types of things can be improved.
Sure.
Yes, yes. Okay. What about the corruption you were talking about with outside entities?
Yeah. I often use the phrase that there's no greater swamp than healthcare. You have about 50 million different hands in the pie trying to get a slice of, what is it, the $5 trillion that we spend on healthcare.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone from pharmaceutical companies to technology companies, information technology, you have insurance, everybody with like hand in the pot there. And we've got to a stage now where medical decisions from the top are primarily based on who's sponsoring who. It's a terrible situation. That's why I'm not a member of any physician societies now. All of them, the American College of Physicians, American Medical Association, look at who's sponsoring them. They're receiving millions of dollars total from pharmaceutical companies. So obviously they're going to be loyal to the pharmaceutical company and then push their products. Many medical schools are receiving donations from big companies. And this is a difficult one to solve without some very high level government policy. And it links to what we were saying about the pharmaceutical companies not having this much influence. They have to be curtailed in terms of their power. I think that this is a problem which is probably not going to be solved for decades. It may never be solved, unfortunately, unless we have a radical rethink of how we're delivering healthcare and what framework that is within, and have very clear boundaries that pharmaceutical companies only get this much power, insurance companies, X and X. Now, right now, you've got so many different players. Meanwhile, the physician societies are also concerned about maintaining a minimum salary. So it's just one gigantic mess. And at the end of the day, the patient is the forgotten one.
Yes, yes. I like that you pointed out earlier the importance of a leader or a leadership to come in and to really take, this corruption and the revamping of the healthcare system in order, because we need a change, because we've been talking about, as far as I've been alive and looked into this, it's been always been a problem and it's always been looked at and we need to fix it, and the quality, the access, the care. And we've had leaders and they've done some good things, but also we continue to keep having these same problems.
Absolutely. Yeah. And they just keep getting worse and worse, sadly. So I don't think necessarily in the short term, if people are thinking what they can do, that the answer resides in, again, being part of the system. I know a lot of people now are taking matters into their own hands. A lot of doctors are as well. Mm-hmm. Concierge medicine is taking off, where doctors will simply go outside of the system, receive a direct payment, and then you'll have full access to them for a year or so. I know where I am in the US, in the Northeast, that's really taking off, but it's expensive. Not everybody can afford that, sadly, mm-hmm. a concierge doctor. In the short term, I would encourage, I don't know how many doctors will watch this or medical professionals, but anything one can do to realize the agendas out there and open your eyes to what's going on. Realize that every time a directive is given to you, that it may well be tainted in corruption. There may well be some sort of kickback at the top in terms of trying to get you to prescribe a medication or practice in a certain way, and mm-hmm. do your best. And if you're in the medical field, always make it about the patient. If you focus on the patient and delivering care, doing that to the best of your ability, then although I've said a lot of negative things about our system, it's still a very rewarding job when it's just me and the patient. The problem is all of these other players. And when I'm not with the patient, I'm dealing with all the bureaucracy that is part of US healthcare.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And I think that's, you know, driving some good doctors away, unfortunately.
Sadly, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of doctors are leaving the profession.
Mm-hmm. And especially primary care. Like you said, exactly. There's a shortage there. So what about some of these lessons? You know, the last 3 years with the COVID pandemic and so forth, I mean, we learned a lot. We went through a lot. Hopefully we learned a lot, I guess you should say, because I want to believe moving forward that people are learning from this, what was done right, what was done wrong, and then moving on and moving into the future, we will do better. Do you have hopes that that will, that is what's currently taking place, that people are learning the lessons and we're going to do better in the future, or it's still a mess?
I would like to think that some people have learned some lessons. Obviously, there's a segment of the population that will never learn lessons. Unfortunately, many of our leaders haven't learned their lessons. I think a lot of them would do the same thing again. And the pandemic is a prime example of what happens when you have an emergency situation and then you have all of these players come in that see a big opportunity to gain financially, which is exactly what's happened. It's been the biggest money and power grab maybe in the last 100 years. And most people have either stayed silent or not even been aware of what's happening. So it's sad that that's the case. I think that people who have been through the last few years will always remember it. And everybody, even the most hardened person, will be able to say, oh, well, you know, that thing I learned at the, you know, halfway through the pandemic that people said was true at the beginning turned out not to be true. And maybe I should be a bit more skeptical the next time, hopefully. But if you look at this from a longer term viewpoint and you take a stoic approach, I mean, humans are not known for being calm and rational in emergency situations, whatever they may be. 9/11 would be the other one during our lifetime. Mm-hmm. We often have reactions which are illogical and we end up doing things afterwards which are regrettable and have been nothing to do with the initial problems. And you have a money grab by the people at the top who are very clever in how they do it. Mm-hmm. Whether we'll see another pandemic in our lifetime or not, who knows? But I think if a pandemic happens again, I don't think that governments, as much as they might like to, would be able to institute measures such as lockdowns again, because people went through that and saw how devastating that was. I mean, we're still seeing the health consequences now from what happened 2-3 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I'm hoping pandemic-wise, people are a bit wiser. Whether we'll be wise if something else happens, I can't say.
Yes, I would like to see people take control of their health so that if a pandemic does happen, they're going to be in a better place. They're not already starting with chronic disease and obesity, which we found out during the pandemic that put those people most at risk for hospitalization and so forth. So I hope the healthcare system, medical care system really promotes, you know, people to, you know, take control of their health so that in case something like this does happen again, you're better prepared.
I'm not that optimistic that our medical system will do that. Sadly, I don't think that they're interested. I think the leaders at the top are interested in pharmaceutical solutions. They are not interested in empowering people. On the contrary, they want to disempower people. I mean, imagine taking the one thing which is really in people's control, i.e. what they eat, how much they exercise, unless you have some huge disability, that's in your control. Imagine taking that and telling people actively that it's not in your control, which is what they're doing. They're saying the narrative now from the establishment is obesity is genetic. And many top leads, even Harvard University, is saying that. And it's very sinister. I'm not a conspiracy theorist. I hope I don't sound like one, but this is all very deliberate because these people have entrenched interests in keeping everything the way it is, in disempowering people, because it's going to increase their profits the more people are sick and disempowered. I mean, how bad do you have to be to tell somebody who is eating sugar and refined carbohydrates all day that their obesity is genetic? Disempower them, give them the idea that the answer rests with injections or pills. I mean, it's an awful situation. And COVID was the prime opportunity. I will draw the example of aliens looking at the Earth and saying, that's strange. You had a country with so much metabolic dysfunction. I mean, the official statistic is under 10% of the country is now metabolically healthy. That's it. It's under 10%. 90% are unhealthy. 40 years ago, it was probably 90% healthy. We've done this to ourselves. And imagine aliens looking at the Earth and saying, a pandemic is arriving, which is going to affect the metabolically unhealthy. Obesity is probably a bigger risk factor than age. So this is their chance to get on top of it. And they didn't. Mm-mm. Absolutely didn't. On the contrary, they locked people up so they couldn't exercise and they refused to talk about obesity. I mean, that was a perfect time, Lisa. If there was ever a time in our history where we were going to go all in and say, okay, this is a problem. We need to tell people that they can't eat junk and they need to exercise. That was it. I didn't see any public broadcast. Did you?
Nope.
Not one.
I saw a lot for get your vaccine. Yeah, I definitely saw a lot for get your vaccine, get your booster. We have the solution with drugs and yeah.
Yeah, because that's going to make billions of dollars.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a very sad situation, but I don't want to finish on a note of such pessimism. I want everybody to know that they can be empowered. You can't solve the ills of the whole country or the world. I can't do that. You can't do that. Mm-hmm. But at least take charge of your own health and realize that you've got this one body, which is a temple. It's a gift from God, a gift from nature, whatever you believe. And you owe it to yourself to treat it well for the few years you're on this earth. Be as physically healthy as possible. Be as mentally sharp as you can for yourself and your family. These are all decisions that you can make every single day, but the entire culture is set up to take you down the wrong road, because then you become a recurrent customer, in a way a slave to the system. You do not have to go down that route. There's a better way and a happier way.
Yes, there is. And you know, for the people that may have lost some trust in the healthcare system, in government agencies, in their doctors, I just want to leave on a positive note that there are good doctors out there like Dr. Dand. And yes, you know, that gives me hope that there's at least some truth telling, you know, tough love that's coming out. And I think that's what is needed in, you know, for people to have that empowerment.
Absolutely. Yeah. There's some good doctors out there. As long as we're not censored, wink, wink, you can hear our message.
Yes, yes. That's very sad, but yes. So, well, great. We're coming here toward the end. Do you have any final thoughts on fixing the healthcare system?
I think the best way to fix it, to continue what I just said, is for everybody to do their best with their health, make the right decisions, be as wise as possible in terms of knowing when you should go see a doctor, when you don't need to see a doctor. And when the time comes, I mean, most of us will face a time where we do have to interact with healthcare. Be ready. Do your own research. Know what questions to ask. I have a lot on my YouTube channel, a lot of resources, what questions you should ask a doctor if you or your relative is hospitalized. Know what's going to come at you. Don't be caught off guard. But hopefully that day is a long way away from everyone who's watching.
Most definitely. Well, thank you, Dr. I always see your name and I'm going to mispronounce it, but Dr. Hand. Dan. Yeah, that H, like.
Yeah, the H is there. It's all right. Lots of people do that. Yeah.
Yes. Well, thank you so much. I appreciate you coming on my channel today and talking about this issue. And I hope it's, you know, planted some seeds in people and they'll start, you know, electing and voting for, you know, people that have their best interest at heart, not their, you know, corruption that's happening behind the scenes.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Yes, yes. And if you guys like this video, be sure to give it a thumbs up and don't forget to leave a comment down below and subscribe and hit the bell to be alerted to when the next video drops. Thanks for watching.